Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to today's WebinX Talks event. I'm Andrew Savage, Business Development Manager for Architectural Design for WeatherTex, and today we will soon officially welcome our very special guest, David Baggs. David is CEO and Program Director of Global Green Tag, and we'll be hearing all about Global Green Tag today. Before we get started, we'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands and waters on which we live across Australia, especially the Worimi people, traditional owners of the land on which WeatherTex is located. So let's now welcome our guest. Welcome, David.
Hi, Andrew.
Nice to have you here. David Baggs is CEO and Program Director of Global Green Tag Australia, the world's leading LCA-based product eco-labelling, rating, certification, EPD and product declaration program operator. Global Green Tag's been voted one of Australia's top 100 most trusted building sector brands. And the whole idea of Global Green Tag is to help guarantee professionals peace of mind when purchasing or specifying. And we'll be learning a little bit more about that later today. David himself is a multi-award winning green building architect, a world-renowned sustainability and materials expert. He's an author and keynote speaker with nearly 40 years experience. David's been voted one of Australia's top 50 green leaders and one of the top 100 sustainability leaders globally. David is chair of the Green Building Council of Australia's Materials Expert Group and a past president of the Australian Life Cycle Assessment Society. Wow, that's quite a lot there, David. Welcome.
And thanks, Andrew. I just need to correct you there. I'm no longer the chair of that group. That's a little bit outdated.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. Oh, well, we'll have a chat to Deborah about that later.
Yes, indeed. Sorry about that.
We do also need to let everyone know that we're sorry to hear that Mary Lou Kelly is unable to join us today. We send her our best wishes and hope to catch up with Mary Lou very soon. But David, let's get stuck into things. Starting at the beginning, can you please tell us a little bit about Global Green Tag and what it is you guys do?
Well, basically, we do the hard work in looking at products with the scientific rigor that is needed in today's world, basically. And that's a world of green building certification, where projects need recognized third-party verification of the sustainability credentials of products. So we do that work. We put it into forms like certificates and reports, call them declarations. Basically, that's a summary report. In different forms, whether it's a logo or a tag. And those are used on and in and marketing and products to connote certain, you know, features of the product that can be intuitively and almost immediately understood instead of architects going back like I had to do in the, you know, the 80s and the 90s and spend days, weeks, months, if you could ever even get the information that we needed to assess products. Because, you know, there's this kind of nexus between problems with an architect saying to a manufacturer, tell me what's in your product, and the manufacturer going, yeah, that's commercial confidence. That's what used to happen to me. And so basically, Mary Lou and I had this realization that we could put the time and effort and knowledge that I'd spent 20 or 30 years at the time getting and put it to work for the whole industry instead of just doing one project at a time. So ultimately, we sort of facilitate the connectivity between protecting manufacturers' confidentiality, but still getting the transparency that the industry needs to be able to verify and use products in a way that can be trusted and relied on and mitigate risk and all those sorts of things.
And it's a third-party accreditation system too, isn't it? So it gives companies like WeatherTex, who do work with Global Green Tag, even more credibility in the marketplace that our sustainability claims are backed up by third-party accreditation or certification against international standards. And I think that's a very powerful tool for us as a manufacturer as well, especially, given that the sustainability and the environment is so important to everybody. So there's a term, earth leadership. which is we're hearing more and more of. And it's not a term that instantly comes to mind when we pose the question, what is product certification? So what does Earth Leadership actually mean for Global Green Tag? And how did Green Tag become, well, probably one of the best in the world, global product certification company?
Yeah, look, our initiating energy when we looked at what we were doing around product certification, Green Tag, was a planet first approach. So we live on a planet, we depend on the natural systems. The natural systems have have their own right to exist in themselves, and that's at the heart of it. But we coexist with nature and animals and ecosystems, and it's underpinned by the fact, or our existence is underpinned by healthy natural systems and the animals in those systems, animals and plants and microorganisms on in that system. And if we threaten the basis on which those systems are healthy, we are threatening not only their existence, but our own existence as well. So it's a planet first approach to try and make sure that if anybody chooses to want to pay attention to those sorts of issues, and, you know, frankly, our view is like, why wouldn't you? Then the information that they need to make their decisions is available through Green Tag. And if they make it, if they make manufacturers and suppliers aware of the kind of information they need to do their work properly, then they've got somewhere to come to get that work done if they haven't already got it done.
Right. Sorry about my barking chihuahuas. So again, when we're talking here about third-party product certification, which in itself implies a certain level of trust, what goes behind third-party certification, and what is unique about Global Green Tag's approach?
Yeah, look, it's a multi-layer approach. When we first started looking at setting up product assessment, people would say to us, yeah, but who checks the checkers? So we realized that we would have to be patently robust in the way we were assessed and the standards to which we held ourselves. So we were the first in the market to get ACCC certification approval as a certification trademark. So that means the ACCC has literally approved our standards and the qualifications of our assessors as being in the public interest and being an accessible standard and being robust enough for them to approve and literally to put ACCC's name against our certification mark. Then we said, well, the third party sort of eco label standard is ISO 14024. Let's get externally verified to make sure we can show the world that we've been verified as compliant with that. So we've done that through another third party called DNV, Danosca Veritas. And we are also verified by them under ISO 17065, which is the conformance assessment body standard. That means that we are qualified to assess products against our own standards, and we have the systems and processes in place to do that in a robust and consistent way, and that's then called up and certified externally by DNV under our quality control management system, our QMS, under 9001.
So it's a layered approach, really, isn't it, when it comes to you guys as certifying companies like WeatherTex, and then you in turn are being certified to make sure that you're doing the right thing. And I remember when I joined WeatherTex just over 3 years ago, I was talking to our managing director, Jason O'Hagan, about Global Green Tag and who they were and what it meant. And he told me that when he joined the company, I think about 8 or 9 years ago, he saw that there was a need for us to find a company like Global Green Tag. And in his research, he found that you guys were standouts just in terms of what you've just explained. You know, you guys not only have a cooperative, collaborative approach with manufacturers, but at the same time, it's very robust, but you're also third-party accredited yourselves, which I think is important. So just along those lines, you've probably seen some pretty amazing examples of sustainable products around the world, and probably some which aren't so amazing. What lengths do some manufacturers go to And what does the level of commitment to the environment look like from manufacturers who are trying to do the right thing?
Yeah, look, I have seen a great range of different factories, from, you know, factories that you could literally eat your lunch off and have got robot delivery systems running around, to some that had a Dickensian flavor to them. And then others, like WeatherTex, that has Dickens age technology adapted to modern day to create some of the most sustainable products on the planet. So
it's kind of the best of both worlds, isn't it? Because we're using 80-year-old equipment, and you can't get much more sustainable than that.
Yeah, well, it's not too many products get made using steam, but it's quite a physical experience to experience your steam cannons, which are pretty amazing. No, I mean, look, whether it's renewable energy or whether it's just pure organic technology, you know, taken apart and put back together again the way WeatherTex is, you can really tell, you know, manufacturers' commitments by the way they deliver their products and what their products are. And, you know, we've been really pleased to, you know, have an association with WeatherTex to be able to certify you, but to be able to deliver you literally the best level of certification of any product that we've currently, any manufactured product we've currently certified with our, you know, your platinum LCA rate and platinum health rate, product health declarations and so on. You know, you literally are one in a category. So, you know, you have manufacturers who've gone out and, you know, got whole roofs full of solar panels and have gone carbon neutral with their manufacturing energy. When it comes to WeatherTex as a product, you're actually a carbon sink. So you're using the sorts of energy generation technology and the sorts of materials that enable you to actually reduce the amount of carbon that is in the environment by, you know, during the manufacture of the product. And there's not too many products that come out that are used in, you know, particularly as cladding, that have got negative carbon potential. So, yeah.
Look, I think just as an employee or team member at WeatherTex, it makes a big difference to me to be working with a company that is actually making a positive difference to the environment and the construction industry. And with the various roles I've had over the years, no company that I've worked for in the past has come close to WeatherTex in that regard. And it instills a certain amount of pride in the fact that I'm working for a company that does care about the environment. Just on that point, do you think that architects, designers and builders in general here in Australia look for products that are certified as being sustainable, healthy and ethical, compared with, say, business as usual products that have been around for a long time? And how does Australia compare with other countries in that regard?
Yeah, look, I think certainly the leading edge of you know, architects and designers and builders are looking for products that are certified. And when I say leading edge, that can be both from a sustainability point of view and how they interact with their clients and what services they're offering their clients. Because if you can say to a client, look, I'm going to offer you a building that's only specified with products that are guaranteed and platinum certified to be healthy while they're in your building, you know, that's a very different statement to saying to them, well, you know, we're only going to use products that have high level sustainability. Because, you know, when people think about sustainability, they have this kind of, the market research has shown they have this kind of out there, near me, on me, in me priority. So anything that's on them or in them has the highest priority. And then the further away you get from them individually, that tend to, you know, lose the intensity of their focus. So if you can talk to somebody about health, then you're talking to them at a different level than you know, planetary sustainability. You can have a completely different conversation. But obviously with the services that we deliver, you can have both conversations in parallel. And you know, particularly with your products, there's great stories to tell in both instances.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. And just on, you know, with governments here in Australia and around the world, do you think they're doing enough to grow and support sustainability within the built environments?
Honestly, compared with, you know, you asked about overseas and what's happening there. I mean, honestly, we used to be in a place where I thought, you know, where I thought we were heading in the right direction for a very brief amount of time there pre-GFC. Things changed with the GFC. And these days, there are definitely governments elsewhere doing a lot more than we are. In Australia, the only place you really see the kind of proactive building sector type sustainability initiatives is in local government. And we're yet to see the kind of net zero carbon 50 or, you know, carbon 20, net zero carbon 2030 kind of initiatives there that all of the state governments and not the federal government yet have actually made commitments to. We're yet to see that filtered down into initiatives that actually have traction in the building sector. I think it's coming and hopefully we'll get there. But at the moment, we can certainly see a lot more done by government, particularly in their procurement departments and particularly in the building sector. Like they have mandatory spends on environmental considerations in large infrastructure and in very large projects. But the robustness with which they apply that is not particularly great, and it would be great to see them do more. Fortunately, we have programs like Green Star and Well, and then the occasional use of programs like LEED in Australia, where the market leaders and large corporates and property groups and the big community developers can actually lock onto and use as standards in the absence of anything from government.
We're actually finding that with some of our large corporate developer partners, people like Stockland and Mervac, who have gone through these types of exercises, and some people who have been regular audience members of WebinX Talks. Remember, we had a chat with Corio a couple of weeks ago, and we went through a circular economy exercise with Stockland, which was very, very positive and turned out very well. But I would agree that we're seeing more leadership here coming from large corporations than we have been from the federal government. And one which springs to mind was the aluminium smelter in Tomago, which have made a commitment to go all of their energy that they'll be consuming by 2030 will come from renewable sources, which is fabulous because they consume around about 10% of all the electricity produced in New South Wales. So that will make a big difference. But yeah, it'd be nice to see federal governments doing more. Now, in terms of global green tag solutions, what are the big issues that face the built environment? And can you tell us about the value behind the product rating schemes that Global Green Tag has designed?
Yeah, well, just to pick up on your last point, your aluminium and other metals make much of the fact that they're going through a renewable energy. And this is you know, you said asking about problems, what are the challenges? This is one of the challenges is the information availability, right? Aluminium industry in general is making claims about the amount of renewable energy that is going into the manufacture of aluminium. And you think, well, if we can get 100% renewables into the manufacturing of anything, we're actually going to be negating the carbon problem. But in many products manufacture, the actual manufacturing process itself gives off as much carbon dioxide as the manufacturing energy itself. And aluminium and sometimes even steel with electric arc furnaces have carbon anodes that actually are where there's a significant amount of CO2 generated. So it's not a, you know, it's an easy grab to say, oh, you know, we're going to go renewable, but unless you've got the life cycle information to be able to break up the process and understand where the carbon is being generated, how it's being generated, and how much impact going renewable is going to actually have on the finished product itself, you haven't got the right decision and you can be easily greenwashed. So this is where as an architect and as a company that's been, you know, founded in the building sector and with the education sector experience that Mary Lou brought to bear or brings to bear, we know and understand that you can, without full information on products, you can easily be hoodwinked or greenwash can take hold and there is no challenge. So we set about to design the world's most robust and effective product rating system. That's our LCA rate program. Green Star then designed its rating tool and wanted certain performance criteria for certification systems, which in the beginning we didn't see aligned. So we created our Green Rate system to relate to Green Star. Later on, when we did our cleaning cleaning and personal product standards, we actually realized that we could have got LCA rate to meet their criteria, and we in fact ended up doing that with those standards. But in the meanwhile, we have this kind of heritage process, which is not life cycle analysis based, called Green Rate, which is currently required for Green Star and is recognized in other rating tools as well. But then other rating tools, you know, like Well come along and Lead, and they're looking for this thing called transparency. Now, you know, I sat across the table from a client who had terrible health problems, and she wanted us to design a chemical-free building. So we went to a plasterboard manufacturer and said, what's in your cements? What's in your plasterboard? They basically told me to get nicked. But then when I was the consultant to the Olympic Village and we sat across the table from that same supplier and said, if you're going to be involved in this project, you're going to need to tell us what's in the products. I said, what would you like to know, Mr. Bax? So, you know, effectively, we became this kind of trusted intermediary to sit between the manufacturers and the market that enabled this transparency to occur in a way that doesn't breach manufacturers' confidentiality, doesn't it breach their secrets, gives the market the transparency it needs, but then, you know, and you know, when it comes to chemical ingredients and transparency, what that does is give you a long list of chemicals with different color flags attached to them. And so if you've got a bunch of red flags and a bunch of ingredients and you hand that to an architect, a designer, or a builder and say, here, sort that out, they have to become instant toxicological experts to be able to make sense of it. So we thought, as an architect, I'd had, you know, the understanding and others in the organization had, you know, come to realize that we needed to do more. And so we took that information and did risk analysis. We looked at what happened for worker health. How are the workers exposed to those risks? How were those risks mitigated? Did they even occur in the final product? And in many instances, they don't, even because when you put ingredients together, you bake a cake, it's not ingredients anymore, it's a cake. So we look at the cake and determine, is the cake a healthy thing to bring into the house or eat or put on your body or in your mouth or whatever you're going to do with it? So the answer is yes. Create information that is in a palatable, accessible form, and it means that the industry doesn't have to go through, you know, this incredible kind of learning process, because it wouldn't happen. So, you know, it has become a we have a lot of different services, and each service is designed to deliver a particular outcome for a particular sector or rating tool or marketing need, whether that's about carbon or health or, you know, asthma and allergies and those sorts of things.
Yeah, so it's multi-layered. I mean, you know, you talking again about the aluminium smelter, there's so many different things that you need to look at. And I guess one other thing, just going off on a small tangent, is renewability, because that's something, yet again, isn't it? There's not too many products out there which are based on renewable resources, i.e. we can regrow timber to make WeatherTex, whereas with aluminium, it comes from bauxite, which is a finite resource, and so on. So there's that layer as well, isn't there, in terms of the environment?
Yeah, look, I mean, bauxite, it's finite, but it's incredibly plentiful. You know, aluminium is one of the most common, you know, elements in the crust, but you know, manufacturing aluminium from bauxite generates fluorine and chlorine and all sorts of toxic gases that can have impacts, you know, in the community around the plant. So, you know, there's a lot of things to be considered. And when we do that analysis, we're looking at the test, the stack results, looking at the levels that are coming out of the smokestacks. Are they to code? Are they appropriate? Are they healthy for the, you know, for the community? It's not just about looking at the product. It's looking about the whole life cycle. Mm-hmm. And being able to communicate that in a way that is instantly, you know, instantly usable by professionals.
Yeah, and accessible. And
alike, accessible, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the important thing. And from your perspective, well, Global Green Tag's perspective, I know we haven't talked about modern slavery, but I know that's something that you guys are also looking at as well. What do you see as the coming future trends for the construction industry and the environment?
Yeah, well, based on, so the Australian legislation impacts companies over $100 million. Anybody who employs somebody in Australia, even if they have one employee in Australia, if they're a multinational earning over $100 million as a group, they're caught in the act and they must do a mandatory report. And I think most people think, well, you know, I don't, as a company or as a practice, I don't earn $100 million, so I don't need to worry about it. Well,
we're talking modern slavery here.
Yeah. So, just think of this: someone like a tier one contractor who is caught by the legislative requirements over their 100 odd projects that they might have going at any one time. They might have 10,000 different products that they're using. For them to do a modern slavery statement that is meaningful and catches all of their impacts the way the legislation requires them to, they're going to have to ask the same questions of every one of those 10,000 manufacturers. And how many tier one manufacturers, how many tier one contractors are there? How many companies out, building companies out there have got turnovers of more than $100 million? There's lots of them. So every one of those will be asking the same questions in a slightly different way from every manufacturer. It's not a big stretch that now the client says to the architects, we've got to collect this information because the client is now one of those, they're doing a DNC and their client is the contractor, and they say to the architects, before you specify a product, we need to know that they're going to have modern slavery information available. Now the design profession is involved, along with certificates for structural capacity and fire resistance and sustainability, is now having to actually bring forward certification around modern slavery. And there was no mechanism to do that. So it probably is still going to be a little while yet before the industry's response gets to this level, because the experience in the UK showed that it did take a while for the awareness to be raised to the point where they were asking the depth of questions that was necessary. But I can see this coming, and that's why we've developed the Modern Slavery Declaration. It's a product level, product specific, supply chain specific declaration that covers all 8 of the criteria required by the legislation and delivers the information in a simple rating. It gives an 8 color scale from red to green in terms of the amount of risk of modern slavery in all of the supply chains combined. And it also gives a rating for the data quality that was used to derive that information. And then, so it does that at a high level, but it also then gives it on an individual ingredient, individual supply chain basis for every ingredient in the product. So again, it's taking the real depth of information that is coming from the supply chains, recording that at its full depth, but also then boiling it up into a way that can easily be aggregated and dealt with, because a product has a low risk with a rating of 3.2. And so you can compare products by products, and because under the legislation, a company has to report annually and it has to show improvements year to year. So using a simple score, a single number score that can be aggregated, because it's on the same system, introduces the potential for the very simple demonstration of of improvement from year to year.
Again, making the information accessible for people who are seeking it.
Yeah, because a lot of the information for products that, for manufacturers that we're working with already, we have all that information. We know who the suppliers are. A lot of, you know, a big chunk of the work is already done. So, yeah.
Yeah. We do have a question here from Marie. Nice to see that you joined us, Marie. How does GreenTag get its funding, David?
So we charge the manufacturers for the work we do. And obviously there's an inherent risk in that approach. And the way we mitigate that risk is we tell them how much the process is going to cost, and they pay 100% of that up front before we start work. So that basically means that they can't be using fees or the fact that you know, we've done work and not been paid for it as leverage to get outcomes. So it's a very clear, concise, and tough process. As you well know.
Well, and it also requires ongoing
vigilance,
serviceability or maintenance.
Surveillance, exactly.
Yeah.
It's an annual surveillance and a three-year recertification process, yeah.
Yeah, which I think is important because things change, as we know.
Yeah.
So one last question. Where can our audience go to learn more about Global GreenTag?
The predominant source of information is free to wear. It's just the GreenTag website, globalgreentag.com. If anybody has any questions, my information is on the website. Happy to, it's just CEO at Global GreenTag, and happy to receive questions. Yeah.
And Vander's just put up Global GreenTag's website on the chat portal for anyone who's interested. Thank you so much, David. We know how busy you are, and we really appreciate you taking time out for us again. This is, I think, your second or third appearance on this platform since we've been doing it, so we really appreciate that. Hang on, there's another question. Could Global GreenTag be continuing to incorporate further UN SDGs, such as regarding modern slavery and net zero product certifications? I think we sort of covered that to an extent, didn't we?
We have done an analysis of every one of our services in relation to the SDGs, and we do provide metrics that could be used for the SDG assessment process if and when they, you know, generate a set of consistent matrix. We certainly have the scoring system that we use in the modern slavery supply chain assessment scoring process is the same scoring methodology used in the emerging field of social LCA. So ultimately that could be integrated into social LCA if and when that becomes a common practice.
Okay, so SDG, that's like a social LCA, isn't it?
Well, it's the UN Sustainable Development Goals.
Gotcha, okay.
Yep.
Well, thank you again, David. I'm going to just share some information with our wonderful audience, if I can just get the right thing up. Hopefully you can all see this. Just letting you all know about our new Revit showroom, where you'll find a digital catalogue with Revit models for all of our products and accessories, 3D families, photorealistic textures, and there's the link if you're interested in having a look at that. I'm told by Revit users it's fabulous. And we will have an ArchiCAD version or AutoCAD version, hopefully for you guys certainly by this time next year. The other thing that we wanted to also let you know about is our specification promotion. If you go to either the WeatherTex website or this website here that you see at the bottom of the screen, you can upload your drawings where you have specified WeatherTex for a project and the project hasn't been built yet, is the only proviso. The more projects you upload, the more chances you have to win $5,000 cash, and that will be drawn just prior to Christmas. The odds are pretty good for this one, so it's really worthwhile uploading your drawings. If you need any more information about WeatherTex, go to this website. I think a lot of you know me and you may have my email address. If not, the customer service team can put you in touch. And if you go to the WeatherTex website and scroll down on the homepage, you will see where you can sign up for our mailing list. So I will stop sharing. Here we are. I've got three screens going here. So Thank you again to our guest, David Baggs from Global Green Tag, and thank you to everyone who joined us today. Stay safe, everybody, and bye for now.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, David. Bye-bye.